Okay, welcome everyone. And why don't we begin just by sitting quietly together, just to kind of focus our attention on the shared space that we are currently occupying. And we will be here now for the next 90 minutes together. So we can take a minute just to relax. And allow all of our energies to begin to settle right here. Okay, great. Thank you. Now, before I begin sharing some of the things I wanted to share with you, I would like to ask you to do something, which is some of you already have. But I would like to ask you if you would, if you don't mind, to turn on your video. Now, obviously, if you're just getting up and you're still in bed, you feel free to leave your video off. But if you're just sitting there and you don't mind being seen, please turn your video on. And then I want to take a minute to just go through five screens here, and I just want to take a minute and go through and see everyone. And I suggest you may want to do the same, but that's an invitation. I just like, I mean, there's, I don't know how many people, there's 126 people here, but I like to at least glance at everybody. Of course, many of you I know. Some I don't know, or I don't know well anyway. Others of you I know quite well. I'm partly inspired to do this because the last free call I gave, oh look, I see some people I haven't seen for a long time. That's nice. The last free call I gave, an old friend of mine from high school that I haven't seen in 40 years showed up. And I thought, well, you never know who's going to be on this call, so you better take a look. And that was very fun for me. Not seeing any old high school friends, but I see a lot of friends here. And some of you I don't know, which is nice. Many of you I do know. You all look lovely, of course. And if your screen's not on, that's fine. I can always, I can just see your name. There we go. That's very nice. Fantastic. Thank you. Now, that seemed particularly appropriate today. Besides my recent experience of discovering an old friend, because it's New Year's Day. So I want to start by saying Happy New Year. Now, obviously, this is New Year only for one calendar. So depending on where you are, it may not be New Year, but there will be a new year eventually. So this is as good a day as any to celebrate. And the first thing I want to say as we move into the new year is I feel utterly wealthy because I have so many amazing people like all of you as part of my life. And so one of the things is on my mind as we move into 2022 is just the blessing of having so many beautiful people to be part of my life. And like I said, some of you I've known for a long time, others of you less so. Some of you I may be meeting for the first time. Regardless, I want you to feel part of this community. I always say, and it has always been true for me, that the single most important thing in that we can do to forward our own spiritual progress and growth and fulfillment and happiness is surround ourselves with wonderful people. And so, you know, a huge part of what I do, a huge part of why I do all the things that I do is selfishly motivated by the fact that I want to surround myself with beautiful people. Now, the wonderful thing about that is while I fulfill my selfish motivation to want to have all of you in my life, I secondarily, as a byproduct, create the opportunity for each of you to be surrounded by beautiful people and spiritually alive, inspired people. So it's definitely a win-win situation. And yes, as I say, Happy New Year to all of you. And we enter into this New Year's seminar. The first thing I want to do is thank you for being here and extend my heartfelt appreciation for your presence in my life. And a very warm invitation to become more engaged with this community in whatever ways you feel called to in 2022. My intention is to create a gathering and a community and a tribe in which everyone is free to engage as much or as little as they want, where everyone always feels completely welcome, and everyone always feels completely free to engage or not engage. So my invitation will always be to engage more in whatever ways you feel called to. And that will, of course, always include being free to engage less when you feel called to. That's how community works anyway. you know, we all engage more. We all lean in at times, and then whoo, we need a little bit of a break. So we back out, we lean in and we back out. That's all fine. Consider this gathering a resource for your spiritual growth that you're invited to make use of. So that's what I wanted to begin with. I just wanted to really thank you. Thank you for being here on this call. Thank you for being here, part of this community in a broader sense. Now, the second message and the main message that I wanted to deliver today on New Year's Day, because this free seminar is called Living Your Truth, because it occurred to me that on New Year's Day, it would be wonderful if we explored the possibility of making the year 2022 the year when we each lived our truth more deeply than we have before. And I thought, to explore that possibility, it would be amazing to think about it together. And it's something I've been thinking about a lot recently. And so I'd like to share some of the ways that I've been thinking about it, and then we'll have a chance to hear from some of you. So first of all, as I said in the description for this, when we hear the phrase live your truth, usually what that means is being courageous and willing, courageous enough to be willing to hold on to unpopular positions in the face of opposition. And, you know, that's obviously a very noble thing. And I do think we should all do more of that. Because it's always tempting when you see something and you appear to be the only one who sees it, or one of the very few who sees it. There's an enormous amount of cultural pressure to switch how you see. This is actually exactly why I say that surrounding yourself with like-minded others is the most important thing you can do for your own spiritual growth. Because if you're alone and you're growing spiritually, spiritual growth, as we'll continue to discuss today, inevitably involves encountering and perceiving things beyond the ordinary, you know, beyond what is familiar and what is customarily accepted by our culture. And so whenever you start to see things that are not customarily accepted by our culture, which means you're seeing things that other people aren't seeing, there is going to be explicit and implicit pressure to change the way you're seeing so that it conforms with how other people are seeing. I mean, this happens in gross ways. We've all experienced this. It happens in gross ways, you know, where you start expressing an opinion and people start to say, no, you're wrong. that's a very obvious way, but it happens in very subtle ways also, where you, the way that you're living or the way that you're expressing what you see is just garnering blank stares, or minimal response. You know, it's actually more effective. If people really wanted to be cultural controllers, they wouldn't attack your positions, because attacking your position usually, it often makes people dig in harder on it. You know, the best way to dissuade someone is just simply to ignore what they're saying. And if enough people ignore what you're saying and pretend they don't hear it, you know, the message will be delivered. And this is often what occurs. So my friend and colleague, Jeffrey Kripal of Rice University, who has written numerous books. Let's see if there's one next to me. No, it's too high up on the shelf to get. But he wrote a book called The Flip. And basically it was about research he had done in which he was discovering that many, many people have experienced profound spiritual shifts in their life flips in consciousness where they began to perceive things differently. But the majority of the time, they forget them. And a big part of why they forget them is because there was so little cultural recognition that validated what they were experiencing that eventually it just fades until it disappears, even from memory. Now, some of you have probably heard this story, but it's one of my favorites. There's a gentleman who, well, when I was doing in-person retreats, when that was more possible, he would come to my in-person retreats. He would come with his wife. And he was, I think, in his 70s. And he'd been a Buddhist practitioner, and he'd done he'd done a lot of personal development and spiritual work over the decades. And he always claimed that he never had a spiritual experience, which I never believed, of course, because who would spend decades going on Buddhist retreats and EST training weekends if they hadn't had any confirmation at all? And, you know, he would always claim that he only did these things because his wife dragged them. So, you know, she was always his convenient excuse. But I didn't really ever believe him. But he was very consistent with that opinion about himself. And then one day we were on a retreat. He was on one of my retreats in Montreal. And it wasn't even a long, you know, it was a 5-day retreat, you know, but it might have been a 4-day retreat. And at some point in the middle, I said, okay, what I wanted people to do, and it was in the domain of validating, I wanted people in pairs to describe their most profound spiritual experience and do it in a way in which they were really not just speaking about a memory of it, but igniting the experience in the present moment and speaking from the experience. And then the other person was just going to listen, you know, and receive, be very open to receiving. And this is a way of, it creates a sense of validation, you know, when we can express our deepest experiences in a way that gets really received. It's profound. I mean, I get to experience this all the time. It's like my job allows me to experience this. So I'm one of the luckiest people on the planet in that sense. So we were doing this exercise, and when it was done, this gentleman wanted to, you know, he raised his hand. He wanted to talk about his experience. And he described how, you know, he was thinking about what experience he was going to talk about. And he didn't really have any experiences to talk about. But, you know, I had made it very spacious. So I said, it could just be as small as a little aha moment. You know, it doesn't have to be a big spiritual experience. And he kind of vaguely remembered one from his when he was younger. And he started talking about it. And then as he talked about it, this is like, you know, sometimes in therapy, someone will have a memory of a traumatic experience that they had completely forgotten. And then in somehow talking with a therapist, it will just emerge. Well, he was having that experience, but it wasn't about a traumatic event. It was about a spiritual breakthrough he had had when he was in his early 20s. And the way he described it was profound. It was clearly a huge breakthrough for him. I can't remember the circumstances under which it happened, but it was more or less uncalled for. And he just burst into a kind of radically non-dual view and remained kind of blown out of his head for a few weeks, but didn't find anybody and didn't know anybody whom he could speak to about this that didn't think he was going crazy. So everybody that he talked to thought, you know, this was a problem. they didn't relate to it in any way as a positive. And so eventually he kind of moved on, you know, which is kind of fascinating. Eventually the experience faded. Then it was a memory. And then, of course, it became a more and more distant memory. And then it was more or less forgotten until this day when he was in his mid-70s on retreat and remembered. And I remember the experience of seeing his realization, because suddenly his whole story about how it had always been his wife that dragged him to all these events was completely invalidated. And there was a new story in which he realized that he was driven by that original experience, that unconsciously, even without him knowing it, there was something about what had opened up for him in his 20s that he'd been pursuing his whole life. And he had found other reasons, you know, to blame for his activities. But at this moment, at least, what he became very aware of was that there was a deep and profound spiritual experience at the heart of his whole spiritual search for decades. And so when I think of living your truth in the sense of holding to your ideals, it's part of my makeup that what I really care about is that deep realization that you've had that's been driving your spiritual search. And some of you may be very aware of what that experience was. And it may not be just one experience, of course. It may be a whole series of experiences. Some of you may be like this gentleman and think you haven't had any spiritual experiences, which I won't believe, but you might hold to that idea. But to me, the most exciting form of living your truth means living according to that. What would it mean in the case of your deepest realization, to live your life, you know, in alignment with it, in accordance with it? So that's one way that we have all heard of the idea of living your truth. But there's another way that's actually even more exciting to me than that. And that's pretty exciting. So this one's really good. And that is living your truth in the sense of, and we've all heard this also, that we all create our own reality, that our beliefs create our reality. So in that sense, we're all always living our truth, right? Because we're all always living in a reality created, at least in part, by what we believe is true. And I want us to think about this, because this position is a very fascinating one to me, because I think it's more profound than many people realize. Even though I think a lot of the ways that people talk about this don't make any sense. And here's why. And, you know, I may have a personal bias here, but I will share it. I once worked for someone who had a very strong belief in we create our own reality. And, you know, he believed he would apply this to all kinds of situations. So, you know, I did some marketing work for this person. And if I sold less of X, Y, or Z than, you know, what he thought I should have, he would demand to know why I had wanted to sell so little. And no matter what I said, you know, I know I really wanted to sell a lot. I worked hard, and I did work hard. Believe me, I worked 10, 15 hours a day. You know, I sold as much as I could possibly have sold. You know, maybe you could say I was incapable, but you couldn't say that I didn't work hard at it. And it just didn't ring true to me that you could apply the you create your own reality in that way, because it denied the existence of an outside world of influence. It's as if from that point of view, it's like we're utterly alone in the world. We're the only active agents in the world, and nothing acts upon us. It just doesn't make sense. It didn't ring true. But anyway, I would be subjected to this all the time, you know, because I was hardly ever meeting the standard, whatever standard it was. And so I was constantly being asked why I wanted to miss the standards so often. Now, the irony to this story is, in the end, this same person's just experienced a massive failure in their own life. And having worked for them for a long time, I asked for permission, respectfully, if I could address them in the way that they always addressed me around similar situations, to which he said yes. And I said, then can you tell me why you wanted this failure? And of course he said, I didn't want this. I said, but you said we always get what we want, you know, because we create our reality. And he said, well, no, it's not that simple. You know, this was after like 20 years of having held that. I said, well, after 20 years, you can't really just say it's not that simple now. You know, so isn't this interesting? The first time it turns on you, it's not that simple, but it was always that simple for thousands of people before. Anyway, it's a whole other story we won't get into. But I realize, I point that out because I realize there are limits to this idea that we create our own reality. So on the one hand, there are limits to the idea that we create our own. We need to leave room for the fact that we may be influenced by something beyond ourselves. You know, I'm not into the idea that if you end up with some disease that somehow you wanted it. I don't know if that, anything's possible. It could be true, but it's not really my thing. And I think we need to be careful there. Now, at the same time, in very profound ways, we live in a world of our own beliefs. And so how deeply our experience of reality is influenced by what we believe is something really worth thinking about. Because I think it's much deeper than we think. I don't want to go all the way to absolute. I don't want to go all the way to denying any influence beyond our beliefs. But I think it goes way, way close to that. I think we are creating our reality consciously and unconsciously through beliefs to a much, much greater degree than we imagine. And the aspect of that which I am the most excited about is how that impacts our spiritual growth. So one of the things I wanted to mention on this call is this month I released a book which I'm very excited about, which is called The Path of Spiritual Breakthrough, From Awakening to Cosmic Awareness. And part of it is autobiographical. Part of it is kind of a spiritual memoir of mine that's really only about the spiritual experiences I had. It doesn't really tell you much about the circumstances of those experiences. It's a story of how each experience opened to the next experience, and that experience opened to the next experience, and that experience, you know, there's a journey that we're on spiritually, which is really a journey of experience. And in this book, at least, I'm not talking about the journey, the physical journey. I'm not talking about the people that I knew and the places that I was and the things that I was doing. I'm just talking about how my consciousness opened one step at a time, which from one point of view is what the spiritual journey is. It's a journey in consciousness. So I want you to remember that because it's important for this conversation. We tend to be very focused on the journey of our embodiment, and our embodiment is very important. But we are also having a spiritual journey, and the spiritual journey is happening in, not in their mind. This is what gets subtle. It's not about your mind, but it's about, I don't want to talk about it as the mind, because in our culture, the mind, the idea of the mind is overly wedded to the psychological experience of mind. And mind is bigger than just that. So I want to speak about it as you know, we have our embodied experience, our embodied journey, but then we also have the, you know, traditionally it's often spoken about as the subtle body experience. It's an energetic experience. It's not an experience of mind. It's an experience of our non-material being. This is a big part of what I wanted to share with you too. See, I just do these calls because I like to share with you what I'm thinking about. And you're my best friends to share it with. So this is what I get to do. But I am fascinated right now and have been for months by my non-material existence, right? So, and I'm going to talk more about this, but we have a non-material existence. We have a non-material life, a subtle life, an energetic life. And that's a big part of where our spiritual experience unfolds. And so this book, The Path of Spiritual Breakthrough, is partly an autobiography of spiritual experience, of my unfolding non-material life. The other half of what this is about is essentially spiritual hermeneutics. So in philosophy, hermeneutics, well, Hermes, you probably know, Hermes was a Greek god. And Hermes was particularly the messenger god. Hermes had the, I think he was in the Roman canon, he was Mercury. And he was Hermes to the Greek, and he had little wings on his feet. And that allowed him to fly up to the gods and fly back down to earth. And he was the messenger god, so he would bring the messages back and forth. And so from the god Hermes, we get the term hermeneutics, which basically means how we interpret spiritual texts and spiritual events. And so this book is about spiritual hermeneutics. It's about, you have an experience, you have a spiritual breakthrough, right? It's called The Path of Spiritual Breakthrough. You have a spiritual breakthrough. Great. But you don't just have a spiritual breakthrough. You never just have a spiritual breakthrough. You also interpret it. You make meaning out of it. And you cannot avoid making meaning out of it. So even if you decide it's meaningless, that's the meaning you made. You know, it's very interesting when you consider the fact that human beings at this point in our evolution, it's not possible for us to not make meaning of things. Our minds, as they are currently developed, are meaning-making machines. And they don't make meaning, you know, just when we turn them on. Meaning is made all the time. Meaning is much more fundamental to reality than we might imagine. We live in a meaningful universe, at least as human beings. You know, I don't know if this is the same, if this is also true for rocks, but it might be. I'm not ruling that out. But humans are what I'm most worried about because I happen to be one, at least this time around. And as human beings, it's impossible for us to live without, like, it's kind of like, I'm looking for props, but not seeing one. Oh yeah, I got one. Hang on. Got a prop. There you go. It's a dime. Now, it's impossible, and I'm not talking about the printing on it, but I'm talking about the fact. This coin has two sides. See? One, two. One, two. And I could shave one side off, but I could never shave it off so that it became a one-sided coin. Because every time I flipped it over, there would be another side, no matter how much I shaved off. You cannot have a coin that has only one side. It always has two sides. And if you ever shave it so much that one side disappears, the whole thing will be gone. Because by definition, coins have to have two sides. So in the same way, human beings cannot be separated from meaningfulness, in my opinion. The human reality that we live in is a meaningful reality through and through, all the way. And if you stripped all the meaning out of it, there would be nothing left that could be meaning, that could be reasonably called reality. So your spiritual experiences will be interpreted. And so a big part of this book is is the story of how I interpreted my experiences, but more generally, how we interpret our experiences and how those interpretations either open doors to further experience or close doors. And I use the story of my of a friend of mine who had a massive spiritual experience at one point over the death of a friend. And for 2 weeks, he was just really in this wide open state. And then a month later, I saw him and it was like he was gone. It was back to normal. And I asked him what had happened. And he said, oh, the experience went away. I was glad, you know, it didn't really mean anything. But that was the meaning he had attributed to it. It didn't really mean anything. It wasn't really important. And because that's what he attributed to it, it didn't lead to anything else happening. Now, if he had determined that that was an opening to heaven, you know, an opening to the divine, you know, he would have pursued it differently. He would have thought about it differently, and he would have opened more doorways. And who knows where he would be now? You know, now it's like 30 years later. So I've often talked about this particular dimension of spiritual life as creative illumination. Because long ago I realized that we not only seek illumination by doing practices and study, we actually create illumination. We play an active part in creating our own spiritual life, our own spiritual breakthroughs, you know, our own awakening. This happened for me very dramatically, very early on in my kind of spiritual pursuit. I mean, I say early on, it was like 10 years in, but it was early on now because I'm old or older. But I was in a meditation retreat and I started to feel something happening in my foot. And it just felt like my foot was going numb, which often happens when I sit cross-legged on retreat. But I kind of thought, well, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's something more profound than that, which seemed sort of ridiculous at the time. But I said, okay, I'm just going to like let this feeling overtake me. And as soon as I relaxed into the feeling that way, it just expanded to like encircle me like in a cocoon. And I felt like I was floating on air. And I was, you know, I sat for another hour at least, just perfectly suspended in this profound state of energetic holding, I would say. And what I realized is I had played a part in that happening. And before that moment, I would have thought, well, that's cheating, you know, because, and you all know this, most of you, when I teach meditation, I tell you, don't do anything. I say, let everything be as it is. And now you're cheating because you're participating. But that's when I started to realize that there's a second part of the path. The first part is the letting go. The first part is the letting everything be as it is. It's the total detachment from the world of the familiar. But then when we start to be moved by these subtle energies, there's a second part, which I called creative illumination, in which we need to keep leaning into and surrendering into each next opening. And if we don't do that, if we just let go and detach, and I believe I've seen people in this. Yeah, you end up in some weird places if you just detach and you don't come back. You know, for instance, I was on a board of a spiritual center, and there was another board member there. You know, I think his name used to be like Larry or something, and now he was. Now he referred to himself as the person who used to be called Larry, because, you know, he had experienced total detachment from self. And then he would speak like, you know, the person who used to be called Larry would wonder, da, 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 you know, he would never say, I wonder, because there was no I there in theory. But I'll tell you, we did our first board meeting for 2 hours, and it got really tiring, because he was the only one playing that particular game. So you could probably imagine that he was disinvited from the next board meeting, because there wasn't really going to be any value to that conversation. So, you know, becoming radically detached is not, to me, an end in itself. Because I've always been interested, for me, the spiritual process has always been about increased creative potential in life. It's never been about escaping from the world, you know, just so that you can be detached, a detached observer, you know, the quote unquote witness. You know, there's a lot of power in that kind of very detached witness position. It just doesn't appeal to me as a way of life. You know, I want to be, as I often talk about, an artist of possibility. I want to be someone who's bringing new possibilities into the world from the beyond. And that's where I feel when we are interpreting our spiritual experiences, we're not interpreting them in a normal sense. This is the thing that I'm totally enthralled by at the moment. That profound interpretation, that spiritual hermeneutics of creative illumination, is not something Jeff does. Not this Jeff, not the embodied, you know, the merely embodied me does. It's something that my, okay, I'm just going to use the words. I don't know what words to use. When you start speaking about this stuff, you like run out of words. So I'm out of words. So I'm just going to say it the way I feel it. It's what your angelic self does. You know, there is an aspect, a non-material aspect of you. You could call it your soul. You could call it your angelic being. You can use whatever word you want, but it's a non-material aspect of who you are. And that's, and it exists in the space that for years I called betweenness, in which I got from a spiritual teacher named Richard Rose. And the way he used the term, he said betweenness was this magical state of consciousness. It was a magical state of being neither here nor there, neither now nor then. It was the perfect middle place before between all pairs of opposites, but it wasn't any of those. You know, and I always thought of it because that was the space in which, when I was in, say, meditation, or when I was interpreting spiritual events, that was the kind of space I was in. I wasn't in this world anymore, but I wasn't totally out of it either. I wasn't in some non-dual, non-existent state. I was somewhere in between. And there, reality seems much more malleable. I have much more capacity to create what's real. Now, I've been working with those ideas for years, but a year or so ago, I ran into the work of a French philosopher named Henri Corbin. And this book, All the World an Icon, is by a guy named Tom Cheatham. And Tom Cheatham is probably the world's greatest expert on Henri Corbin, certainly one of them. And more recently, I've been reading this book. It's called Swedenborg and Esoteric Islam. Because Henri Corbin was a scholar, he was a mystical scholar, and he studied the Islamic mystical tradition. And what I learned from him, and by the way, his claim to fame, Henri Corbin's claim to fame, even though hardly anybody has ever heard of him, but his claim to fame is that he was the person who coined the phrase the imaginal realm. And many people have heard about the imaginal realm. People like Barbara Marx Hubbard use that term a lot. Now, the imaginal realm, from what I've been reading, it Henri Corbin got it from the Islamic mystical tradition, the esoteric Islamic tradition. And the way he described it was, in the modern world, most religious traditions, especially Western traditions, but maybe all of them, I don't know. But he said most of them have gotten overly focused on heaven and earth. So heaven is God, is divinity, is the sacred, is non-duality. You know, heaven is pure potential. Heaven is completely non-existent, but with the potential for everything in it. So heaven is not here at all. And earth, of course, is where we live. It's the physical three-dimensional world. And so Corbin's position was that in modern times, religions are overly focused on heaven and earth, on humans and God, right? There's as if there's just two. You're either human or you're God. You're either on earth or you're in heaven. And he said in the Islamic tradition, actually, much more about the esoteric tradition of Islam has to do with the place between heaven and earth, which he said the word they had for it in the Islamic tradition could be roughly translated as the nowhere place, because it's a, and he used the term imaginal realm. I think that was probably a good move. The nowhere place doesn't sound so great. Like, you know, I'm going to teach you about the nowhere place. Oh, I don't know if I want to learn about that. But imaginal realm sounds pretty cool. So he used imaginal realm, but he wanted to be very clear. So this book has one of his most famous essays, and it is called, well, the English translation would be The Imaginal Realm. But I think in French, I would have to see it. I can't find it. Anyway, it's Imaginal Realm in French. Let's just say that. And there it was. Mundus Imaginalis. That's not French, but he called it Mundus Imaginalis, which is the imaginal world, which often gets translated as the imaginal realm. And he didn't want to use the word imagination. He goes into like 10 pages of don't use the word imagination, because he said in the modern world, you see, this thing that he was discovering, which is that there's this, in modern religions have become infatuated with heaven and earth, means that they've rendered the in-between as meaningless. So the in-between in the modern world, which you could call imagination, is really more like fantasy. It's like the stuff you make up that's not real, which is why he didn't want to use the term imagination for it, because he said the imaginal realm is a very real realm. It's a non-material realm. It's a non-material world, but it really exists. It just doesn't exist materially. And so if we think of it as pure imagination means made up. He said it's not made up. It's a real place. It's just much more fluid than the material world is. And the more I've read about it, the more it rings true with my experience. I started reading about it a lot. Oh, I don't have it. When I was writing the book, Higher Self-Expression, there's a chapter on Henry Corbin in that book. And then I've continued. And now The Path of Spiritual Breakthrough is really kind of my application of a lot of those ideas. So he talked about these in the Islamic tradition. It's so beautiful. There is, in that tradition, there's us, our earthly self, but we all each have an angelic self. And the angelic self emerges from the divine, from the perfect unity. And it gradually descends. That's the process of involution, where the divinity individuates into an angelic being, or what you could think of as a soul. And that soul gradually becomes more and more embodied physically and more dense until it be, until it's it becomes fully embodied as a human form. And so that's the process of involution. There's also concurrently a process of evolution in which we, the physical self, journey upward into divinity through the imaginal realm, through the betweenness states. And then he talked about the various beings or angels that you would meet, that you encounter in these between realms. But if we think too materially about them, we think of angels as something that have bodies, which kind of throws us off because they don't have bodies in the way that we have bodies. And so the way that he writes about it, it's more useful to think of them, at these angels, as states of consciousness rather than they're beings, but they're beings that are more like states of consciousness. So in a sense, when we have a spiritual experience and we're experiencing that, that is an encounter with an angel. And the angel is that. And so I was reading all about this in Henry Corbin, and then I more recently started reading about the same thing in the perennial philosophy of the Western tradition. And I learned that in the perennial philosophy of the West, often that's thought about as like the underlying truth that's the same in all traditions. And this person was saying, he's a scholar of this, he was saying that's not a totally accurate way to think about it. It's not totally inaccurate, but it's not totally accurate. When you speak about the perennial philosophy, yes, in a sense, it's the truth that underlies all religion. But in a more profound sense, it's the perennial philosophy is the truth. Essentially, it's the truth you can't put down. It's perennial because it keeps returning. It returns in this form, and then it returns in that form, and then it returns in that form. There's a perennial philosophy. There's a fundamental conception or science of reality that keeps returning over and over again. It returns in one form, and then it returns in another form. So that's why all of these religious traditions have the perennial philosophy at their core, because they're all an expression of it in a different manifestation. And what I was learning is in the Western philosophical tradition, the perennial philosophy largely goes back to Plato and the Neoplatonists and people like Plotinus, whom I always knew was more profound than I thought. And now I find out they're even more profound than I thought. But interesting, Plotinus is often known as a great non-dual thinker. He's often, for instance, Ken Wilber, the modern day philosopher, Ken Wilber is a big fan of Plotinus. And so are many people who are inspired by non-dual philosophies of Hinduism and Buddhism, because Plotinus spoke about the unchanging dimension of reality so beautifully, the unchanging, the unknowable. What I found out recently that I didn't know is that, although he does write about the changing and the unknowable, he actually wrote a lot more about the soul's journey and about the angelic realms and about how to navigate how to navigate through the soul realms from oneness to earth and then back from earth to oneness, involution and evolution, or as Sue Slovner just wrote to me, the current of manifestation and the current of liberation. So this is the domain that's really got my attention right now. You know, my history was that I spent 20 years living in a spiritual community that was part of the Advaita, that at least at its core was part of the Advaita Vedanta tradition, which is a non-dual tradition of Hinduism in which there was a big emphasis on the experience of total release into divinity. We talked very little about the soul. We never really talked about these in-between realms. But what I'm seeing now, and of course, as you learn about these, now this is an interesting thing. As you learn about these things, you see them more and more in your experience. And you go, oh my God, it's really true. Now, it's a chicken or egg thing. You know, am I seeing the reality of it that existed independent of my ideas about it? Or are my ideas about it creating the reality of it in my life? I don't know. This is the question of the day. You know, to what extent are we creating our own reality? But I can tell you, either I'm discovering the reality of my non-material spiritual adventure, or I'm creating it through changing my beliefs. But one way or another, it's becoming very real to me. And I'm much more in touch with dimensions of myself that exist beyond the physical realms, and much more aware of the journey of that, the part of myself. And I think, even though I don't know that I was fully aware of it at the time, when I wrote The Path of Spiritual Breakthrough, it was part of me wanting to articulate to myself, first of all, and to any of you who get inclined to read it, second of all, but to myself, first of all, to articulate my soul's journey. And my soul's journey through these, you know, what you could call angelic realms, or what Henry Corbin called the worlds of the imaginal realm. He said the imaginal realm consists of many, many worlds, and those worlds are spiritual states. And the soul passes through different spiritual states as it goes from the divine to earth and from earth back to the divine. And this was, I think, a way for me to articulate to myself what I've experienced as my journeys through the imaginal realm and through the various angelic worlds that I've passed through. And so this, as we go into this new year, what I can see is that this further exploration of the in-betweenness of the imaginal realm and the soul's journey, the adventure of the non-material parts of myself, are going to be a huge part of this next year for me. That's what's opening up for me. So you see, we all create our own spiritual adventure. It's like those books. You might remember when you're a kid, choose your own adventure. You read a couple of pages and it says, if you do this, turn to page 32. If you do this, turn to page 64. And then everyone gets a different adventure. Well, I think spiritual adventures are a lot like that. You know, you keep getting, you have a spiritual experience, and then you get to pick, what do you want to do with it? How do you want to interpret it? And then depending on how you interpret it, you go to a different page. And so this is the door that's opening up for me right now. And I'm going to continue to invite all of you into this journey with me, to which you can join to whatever extent you feel called. But I think it's important. I think these non-material aspects of ourselves, which are also influencing us materially, we ignore them. If we ignore them, we do so at our peril, because they're important. And the development of our soul, the growth of our soul, the expansion of our soul, is an essential part of our life on earth. And just gaining access to the unmanifest incomprehensible realms of non-duality, of pure divinity, doesn't feel like enough to me anymore. It feels like the growth of the soul, the journey of the soul, the adventure through these other realms are completely essential, an essential part of our journey. So this is the truth that I'll be living into this year. So I said, this year will be the year of living our truth more than ever before. Well, this is the direction of living my truth as I see it today on January 1st, 2022. That the truth I'll be living into this year is the truth of the reality of my soul's journey and the further development of the totality of my being, which includes access to divinity, access to non-dual awareness. It includes the activities of this earth, the how I am as a person in relationship to other people. And it includes that mysterious in-between journey of my soul. As my soul grows, as my soul descends into greater embodiment in human form, and as I ascend through the soul's journey into a more and more complete union with the divine. So I don't know if that's a New Year's resolution, but it's a New Year's something or other. And I'm inviting you, and to some extent, to join me in this adventure, but also not to join my adventure, you know, to join me in making this the year that you explore your adventure more fully than ever before. It doesn't have to be mine. In fact, it shouldn't be mine. The only person I want on my journey is me. You know, we all need to be on our own journey, but that doesn't mean we can't do it together. Great. So with that, we're just going to take 2 minutes of silence. And then I see questions are already brimming. So I'm happy to do more questions. And I'm going to open up the chat box so that you can also chat things. There we go. Now you can chat to everyone. But let's just sit for a minute. I think I'll scan through all your images again briefly. I love the little charge of excitement I get every time I see people and recognize them. It's just like every next screen. I'm still always surprised people show up. I do these calls and I know it's like pretty much people do show up, but I'm always like, maybe no one's going to show up this time. And then everybody shows up. So I guess I get so excited every time again. Okay, why don't I take some questions then? And let's just really try to keep them brief because we don't have a lot of time and I want to get to as many people as possible. So Nancy, hi. And by the way, someone asked what the name of this book was. It's All the World, an Icon. This is the Tom Cheatham book, which is a bit of a difficult read, but it's a good book. It's not an easy book. Yes, Nancy.
So touching in on my own awareness of this imaginal realm, is it also what some would call a liminal space and also the shamanic realms that are touched on in the shamanic teachings?
I do believe, yes, that these are all pointing to the same in-between space. You know, I mean, and I'm a little bit familiar with shamanic realms from the Lomi Lomi massage work that I've done. So I would, at least my experience puts those all in the same category.
Okay, I'm just curious. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Hello, Michaud.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Hear you.
Okay, great. Wonderful talk, stimulated a lot. And I have like four little points that kind of constellate together. First one is that I've been really called over this sort of Christmas, New Year's to be doing a lot of like card spreads and divination, which I do periodically, but it's been really, and I think it's just that in these times, which are so polarized, I don't relate to any of it. And I feel called to go to the middle realms, the realms in between. And it's like ET phoning home and getting nourishment, you know? And it is this sort of immediately more of myself is present. My field is fuller and bigger when I'm in that mode of divination. And it just reminds me about, you know, you were talking earlier and about those, the poles, and that I've, you know, I think I've not related to the poles most of my life. And so I have, when I'm living my truth, I'm not relating to either of them. But when my life seems to demand or invite me to associate or identify with one pole or the other, I feel like I live in a state of conflictedness. And there's been a sort of a chronic theme of conflictedness throughout my mortal life. And I'm just realizing that that's really what that is, you know, is that I kind of, my home is in that middle realm, you know? And so that was really, a, you know, kind of a lovely thing to bring into relief. And then I have this thing where every time I've been regressed between lives, so to speak, I always end up in this place where I am one of several crescents of light, where they look like they're slightly different colored gloaming crescents. And each of them is holding a frequency, just a single pure tone. And I'm one of those, you know, and we're just hanging in deep kind of look what looks like deep space. And to me, that just really resonated with the talk about these angelic beings, which is sort of like these just these essences in a way, holding these frequencies. And so that to me was like a palpable or a personal experience that kind of resonates or echoes that. And I wanted to share that. And the final thing is that I loved your Be With Me meditation, the guided meditation that you did.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, because it's just been a wonderful koan all week, because it, you know, every time I sit with that guided meditation, it brings up other stuff, but it really is almost like I'm looking at these like husks of little shards of identifications, which the act of trying to just working with the Be With Me koan in a way, illuminated like really nothing else has. I mean, I often bump up against them, but it was just a remarkable. So I just wanted to really thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, this book, All the World an Icon, reminds me of something, because you were talking about these crescents, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what's so fascinating about this in-between state is we tend to only be able to express it in symbols.
Yeah.
Right. And Corbin wanted to say icons, which he said, because he said a symbol is a representation of something, but it's separate from the thing that it represents. Mm-hmm. Where an icon is kind of a facet of something. The icon is the thing it represents, but it's just a facet of that thing. And when he says all the world is an icon, what he means is that everything we see is it's like the tip of an iceberg, right? Everything that we see in the world is the tip of something that extends infinitely into the vast beyond. And I have not finished reading this book yet, so I don't know, but I know that was also Swedenborg's position. So I'm imagining that's how Henry Corbin evidently loved Swedenborg. So he must, I'm sure he connects with him there. But I thought of that when you were describing the crescents. And I don't know if you've read, I wrote a little book called, I can't remember what it's called. I've written so many books, I can't remember the titles anymore. I think it's called The Mystic as Creative Artist. That's what it is. And mm-hmm. it's basically about Evelyn Underhill's, but her conception of this. This was all part of my journey also, was learning more about how she saw the creative, the mystical process as creative. So thank you so much, Misho. So nice to talk to you. Thank you. And Rebecca, please. There you go.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you.
Hi there.
And thank you, Michelle. This word simultaneity that's just been hanging with me for months now. I so resonate with everything you're saying and everything she said. And I'm feeling like it's so hard to express, but like a simultaneity of being in different frequency fields, living in
yes.
different frequency fields at the same time. I mean, they're all present and or accessible.
Absolutely.
And there, anything you want to say about that? Thank you.
Well, what I would like to do is relate that to my experience in Lomi Lomi massage. So in studying Lomi Lomi with Jody Mountain, my teacher, I learned about this in that Hawaiian tradition, they talk about kauna. And the kauna is a base, it doesn't have a direct translation into English, but I think what you just call is vibrational realities would be a great definition of them. She talked about them as kind of dimensions of reality, but that we all live in many kona at once. And one of them is our physical embodied kona. And even that is split up into some, but those are the ones we tend to pay the most attention to. But there's many, many other dimensions of reality that we exist on that we can extend our conscious awareness into. And therefore, we become more and more aware of more and more of who we are. And so I think someone in the chat, Alain, who's actually next to speak to, so maybe I'll just move on to him. So thank you, Rebecca. I love what you're saying. I think she's gone.
No, I'm here. I'm just stunned by everything I'm hearing. Everything you spoke of feels to me like these the simultaneous existence in multiple frequency fields.
Right.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Multiple frequency fields. I love that. I'm going to remember that one. Thank you, Rebecca. Alain, hello, my friend.
Hello. Wonderful openings. Thank you. I was wondering, as I've been studying the book by Carl Johan Kallman called The Nine Ways of Creation.
Okay.
We are moving from a very individually centered
yes.
Level of consciousness, which he calls the eighth wave, to the ninth wave, which is more unity consciousness. Mm. So I'm wondering where the journey of the soul fits into that, because it seems to me through its movement of both involution and evolution, it is connecting with, I'm wondering where that fits, because I'm very open to this exploration of the journey of the soul. And to some extent, does it then limit me to a very individual exploration of consciousness?
Well, that's a great question. So first of all, is that a big fat book?
No, not too big. It's
pretty big.
Well,
I have that book. I have that. I haven't actually read it, but someone recommended it a few months ago, so I bought it. So But this is what I have, you know, I don't know, first of all, the answer, but this is what comes to me when I read what you said. You know, every way we talk about these things is metaphorical, right? There's no exact way to describe things. And certain language brings out certain aspects and is valuable in certain ways, but that language may also hide other aspects. You know, so that's the beautiful thing about language is it discloses reality. But anytime you disclose one reality, you're probably also hiding a different, you know what I mean? It's like turning your head. Speaking one way is like looking in this direction, then you see all that. But then you use a different language, you look in this direction, you see all that. But while you're seeing this, you're not seeing that. So what's beautiful about the language of the soul is that it opens up a lot of the things I was speaking about. It opens up this journey that we're all on that often is happening without our consciously being aware of it. The challenge is the idea of the soul does tend to be a separate thing, right? Separate from divinity, separate from, and so there's a lot of separation implied. If you switch the language that I've used more of is the non-dual language. If you switch to the non-dual language, which is always already everything, right? Then there's no separation involved. And it discloses that aspect of reality, which is perfect unity. But I've seen the danger of being overly focused over there, which is you ignore the reality of the fact that we are also separate beings. And you can ignore that in ways in which you ignore your own needs as a separate individual, or in ways in which you ignore your faults as a separate individual and let them run rampant while staying focused on the fact that you're divine, which is so both are limiting. But what I thought here is, the language of a soul's journey through these realms could wed you to a very separate sense of self. But I think another way to think about it, yes, unique and united, Adriana. I think a way to think about it is we already exist. We exist. We are a continuum from God to Earth always. So when we journey into these realms, it's not like we're going somewhere we didn't already exist. We're becoming aware of more of who we are. And so in that sense, I see the soul's journey as an expansion of our awareness of who we are until ultimately we become aware that we are all.
Okay.
And so then I don't feel any conflict there. You know, all language is limited, but yeah, ultimately there can't be any conflict in unity, right? Because conflict would imply other, and so in unity there can't be conflict. So that's a great question. Thank you, Alain.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, and Susan. Please.
Thank you. I love this day, spending this time with you and with everybody here. I've been taking on the practice of being the divine, seeing the divine, seeing itself. I just want to set that aside for now and ask you, with all the classical meditation that you have practiced and have led people to practice, and all the books that you're reading, the classical meditation seemed to provide for me the ability to see that there's a distinction or a difference between my consciousness and this personality that's taken hold of the body mind that I live within. So where are you now with the need or importance or teaching of classical meditation?
Well, classical meditation obviously could mean a lot of things because there are different traditions. But in terms of the Advaita Vedanta, you know, I guess here's how it works for me. I see this two-stage process. You know, so to me, this is how I understand the spiritual journey works. This is how it seemed to work for me. We come to the path completely embedded in a very limited sense of self, right? We're completely embedded in my case, in the identity of Jeff, who was born on March 16th, 1964, and will die at some as yet undisclosed time in the future. And the history that occurs between those two dates in this physical form is basically what I am almost entirely identified with. And that's true for pretty much everybody on the planet at some point in their development. And so the classical meditation, like the practice of no problem that I teach, we can't grow beyond that limited sense of self unless we can let it go, you know, which means unless we can see it. Because if we can't see it, if we can't step out of it to go, oh, that's a limited sense of self, then we're in it. And from inside it, that identity, we can do any practice we want. The only thing that will be affected is the identity. You know, we can't get to these higher realms if we are embedded in this material existence. So it's a necessary step. But once we have seen beyond, we then have then basically, once we see beyond, once we're free, right? That's spiritual liberation. Once we're free from exclusive identification with the separate sense of self, then we're free to journey beyond it. And at that point, I think it's important that we go and we accept God's invitation, the divine's invitation, her invitation to the higher realms of our being. Now, when I describe it that way, there's a little bit of a problem because it kind of implies one comes first, the other comes second, which isn't, I don't think, ultimately true or the most useful way to think about it. I think they're both always necessary. You know, I continue to meditate in the classical sense because that the freedom we gain from exclusive identification with the limited sense of self is not like a one and done kind of event. You just free yourself and now you don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, the cultural and personal habits of identification are so strong, it requires ongoing letting go. So to me, meditation continues to be important, but it's important, but not what they say. It's necessary, but not sufficient. It's necessary, but if all you do is meditate, I don't know that that's the optimal way to grow. I think there's other ways of working, other forms of work that need to be engaged with, and that we become available for through the letting go process, which is the more classical meditation. And at least from what I'm reading, the traditions that developed these classical forms of meditation often also had lots of teachings around these more subtle domains. It just, those aren't as popular in the modern world. I think they seem a little too airy-fairy and a little too new agey. And so they kind of get less attention, but the, you know, freedom, that's easy, you know, especially I happen to be American. So especially in, you know, selling a new possibility for freedom is not a hard sell in this culture. People are like, yeah, more liberation, I'm up for it. that's an easy sell, but you start talking about the journey of the soul, you either sound like a new age nutcake, or you sound like an overly religious fundamentalist, and both of those are not easy sells in our culture. So anyway, that's how I see the, you know, I would never want to diminish the supreme importance of the more traditional path of letting go. I just always want to counsel people to see that it's necessary but not sufficient necessarily. You know, I mean, for Ramana Maharshi, it seemed to be sufficient. He just let go and that was the end of that. But who knows what was going on with him? You know, and we don't know what he did in his previous lifetimes to get to that point either. So we just hold an open mind.
I'm also very happy to be alive in a time when quantum reality is becoming a scientific exploration, because it is revealing that there is an invisible realm.
Yes.
And so there'll be more people kind of interested. What's going on in that invisible realm? What's coming at us from it? You know, yes, absolutely. The invitations.
And it's fascinating how the discovery of quantum physics has opened the door to more alternative spiritual pursuits, because it's created some scientific basis for legitimacy. Whether that's true or not, who knows? Because quantum physics, you know, that might be around for the next 50 years and then there'll be something else. But regardless, at the moment, it's definitely opened the door for a lot of people to be interested in things that previously they might have thought were too kooky to pay attention to. So thank you, Susan. And yes, this has been so fun. And the main thing that I wanted to do was thank you for being here in every sense of the word here. Encourage you, invite you to be more engaged with this community in 2022. Take advantage of the opportunities that are presented. And, you know, also to tell you about my commitment to living my truth more this year than ever before. And I've had an opportunity to really spell out what that means and to introduce you to the things that I'm thinking about right now, which is just so thrilling to me. Now, what I'm going to do is give you the opportunity to unmute your lines. It's going to take a second, but it won't take long. Should be possible now. So you can unmute your lines and everyone can say Happy New Year or hello or goodbye or whatever you want to say. But thank you so much and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Such wonderful people. Thank you.
Warm aloha.
Aloha.
Happy New Life.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.